Hello and welcome to the Slowolution podcast. I'm your host, Anna Engelhardt, and this is the place for all things health and well-being for the busy mom of today. So grab a cup of tea and get ready to be inspired. Hello and welcome to today's exciting episode where we will be talking all things mindset. And today I'm joined by a very special guest who was a professional American football player for 10 years. Has an extensive leadership experience and is now a principal partner at Vision Pursue, a performance mindset training and technology company. Please welcome John McGrath. John, welcome.
Thank you, Anna. Thanks for having me.
So great to have you here all the way from Kansas.
Yes. Yeah, I gotta love technology, right?
Yes. So today's topic is extremely interesting and something that most of us can benefit. And John and I have talked a lot about the power of the mindset and the power of what we choose to focus on. So I'm super excited to dig in a little bit deeper today and hopefully inspire many people along the way to pay closer attention on their mindset and what they focus on. But first things first, you have had such a successful career, not only as a professional NFL player, but now also as an entrepreneur. Do you mind sharing a little bit more about your experience in the NFL and also the role that your mindset played in that experience and also, you know, in your experience of starting your company and so on?
Yeah, you bet. I'm happy to. So growing up in a small town in Kansas, I had two dreams. One, I had a passion for sports, was a natural athlete, but my real dream was to, one, play football at Kansas State University, and then also to play in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So when I got to high school, I went to a really small high school and got zero attention, like zero attention from colleges coming out, right? And so that probably should have deterred me from pursuing it, but I excelled well enough that Kansas State University gave me the opportunity to walk on.
Right.
So I decided to walk on the football program and very quickly felt like, even though I was way behind everybody else, I did feel like I could catch up. And one of the things that I was really thankful for was having a really good support system for my family, you know, and people that believed in me and gave me the ability to believe in myself.
Right.
And so it took me 2 to 3 seasons at Kansas State to catch up, but I did and was able to earn a scholarship and then became a contributor and then a starting free safety by my junior year. And so once I was able to catch up and once, you know, my belief in myself began to align with my actual performance, you know, it was really a matter of hard work and determination and being coachable and being a good teammate and really focusing on mastering my craft, my skill. And that was a real singular focus for me. So I didn't get too distracted by things that can often distract athletes and just people in general and stayed focused and was able to then become a second round draft pick to the New York Jets. So went from the Jets. I played 3 seasons with the Jets, then 2 with the Lions. In my last 5, I got to come back close to home in Kansas City and finish up my career with the Kansas City Chiefs. And so what was really interesting about that experience was towards the end of my career, as I'm getting ready to retire and I'm retiring because of concussions, I began to really look at the brain and study a lot of the neuroscience that was being discovered at that time and studying a lot of health psychology and then a lot of performance psychology. And as I'm studying all these different disciplines, I realized that part of my mindset was really working for me. Like I had a really strong mindset in certain facets. And at the exact same time, I had some real weaknesses in my mindset, in my psychology that I was really unaware of until the end of my career. And I remember just as I studied them, I remember being shocked, like, how come no one has talked to me about these other skills? And reflecting back on my career, I realized that they really limited me, not only my performance and my productivity, but they limited my experience of enjoying the game. I really didn't enjoy most of my collegiate and NFL career, and that shouldn't have been the case, right? That was right. a mindset thing. So that was where I just became fascinated by all things mindset, and poured myself into it for my own benefit, and then It organically has turned into a business for us. But the sports was the exposure, and then as I transition that into the corporate world, it's probably a similar experience where if I had known what I was getting myself into when I walked on at Kansas State, I might not have actually gone through with it.
Right.
Being an entrepreneur is kind of the same way. If I'd actually known what I was getting myself into when I started this, I probably wouldn't have done it. But you know, sometimes ignorance is bliss. But the same skills that helped me in the NFL have helped me as an entrepreneur, but I've been able to do the business part completely different because I now have developed a certain aptitude in these areas that I was really weak in football.
Right. Yeah. But Vision Pursue is a performance mindset training and technology company. How was the idea for that company born? Or, you know, I mean, you kind of talked a little bit about how it kind of started, but can you maybe just talk a little bit more about what you guys do or how you help your clients? Or
yeah, I'd love to. So the idea was born really my business partner's idea. So as I was studying all these different disciplines, I began to practice some of them, and yeah, it was life changing. Right, like I began to experience life very, very differently than I had for the first 35 years of my life. Mm. And so when I met my business partner, he had already begun creating a mindset training program for the organization that he was in charge of.
Right.
And he realized the same thing, right? So he's looking at culture inside of his organization, and he's seeing like we can't provide really any more perks or benefits or ping pong tables or casual mm-hmm. Fridays or all the different things that companies are doing to try and engage their employees and create a great culture. Mm. Like they were doing all that and they were still losing really great talent. And he finally realized that the primary problem really is internal. The primary problem is the way that their minds have been programmed to experience this. And if we can help them shift their experience, we can make a really big impact on them personally, but also on this team and on this organization.
Right.
And so when we met, there was just, we were on the same path, had similar philosophies. And so we spent some time really vetting it out and really seeing what works, what doesn't work. We got to partner with some really high performing teams early on in professional sports and in the corporate world to figure out what works and what doesn't. Right. Mm-hmm. And develop the training. And then we developed the mobile app and we developed the system to where now, you know, we go in and we deliver a 10 week training program. It's about 8 hours of training over that 10 weeks spread out. Mm. And then there's daily work on our mobile app.
Mm.
And what we found is that you need a combination of the science, right? You need the research, and we need to have a basic understanding of how the brain works, but then you need to know how to practice, right?
Okay.
So it's like a sport, right? So you've got to practice, and the more you practice, the better you get at it. And the better you get at it, the more control you have over how you experience a moment. The more control you have over how you respond to your own thoughts and emotions. I loved how you opened up the segment. You have more control over where you direct your attention.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. And those are critical skills that are often overlooked in our educational system. They're overlooked in most organizational training, but they're critical to performance.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I have personally spent quite a bit of time working on myself and, you know, my mindset in the last years. And to be honest, I find it really shocking the extent to which we're limiting different experiences just because of our mindset or our, you know, beliefs. You
yes.
know, also the notion that material things will fulfill us. You know, I don't know where that comes from, but why do you think, you know, having gone through all this research and working with different people and different clients, why do you think that we have that mindset? Like, where does that come from?
Yeah, so it's a really great question, and I think there's probably varying the philosophies out there. Our philosophy is very simple, and it's rooted in research done by Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor. Mm-hmm. She has a New York Times best-selling book and one of the most popular TED Talks called My Stroke of Insight. And in it, she describes really in her experience of having a stroke, she talks about two primary parts of our intelligence. And there's an analytical part of our intelligence, and then there's a more experiential part, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a little bit of an oversimplification, but for the sake of explaining the problem, virtually everything in the external world is strengthening our analytical mind, and mm-hmm. virtually everything in our educational system is strengthening our analytical mind. And what's happened is we've created a world, really, that has an overly dominant analytical intelligence. And so what happens when that happens, the analytical mind is critical. Like, we have to have it, especially for performance, we have to have it. But if it's the only way that we can, if it's a primary way we're experiencing the external world, the external world is going to feel primarily like a stressful means to an end, because that's the way it sees the world. And that's its job, right? Its job is to survey the landscape and say, what are threats to me and the things I care about?
Right.
So its job is to protect us. Also, its job is to think in language. Mm. So it's attaching word symbols to thoughts, right? And then it's telling a story. And so most of us are really good storytellers. We're telling stories in our heads all the time. And that story, that narrative, becomes the way that we construct meaning from our experience.
Right.
It's the way that we see the world. And so that's operating. At the same time, the analytical part of our intelligence thinks primarily in terms of linear time. So it's very concerned with the past, and it's even more concerned with the future. Right. So while all those are important, like, of course, we want to be able to learn from the past, we want to plan for the future. If the only thing that really matters, if what's primary to me is the past and the future, right, then I tend to miss out on what's happening right now. It disconnects me from the present moment. It disconnects me from life itself.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that would be our understanding, and our belief is that this overly dominant analytical intelligence has created the question you just asked, like, why would we see the world this way? Well, it's really the way we've trained our brains.
Mm. Yeah, I personally used to think, and probably like, you know, many other people, that success is defined by, you know, by my career, by my salary, by, you know, and the list just goes on and on and on. And now that, you know, has completely shifted. And for me, you know, true success is when I get to live my passion every single day in a healthy body. I mean, I know this is like very simplified and very a little bit like out there, but the truth is that I have never been, you know, happier or more fulfilled in my entire life than at the, you know, right now. So do you think that, yeah, you know, that this is like what you just explained, do you think that that's part of the reason why we look at success from such a materialistic point of view, if I can say that?
Yeah, it totally is. So that's what the analytical mind cares about. Right. So it's always trying to construct a concept of self. Right. But that concept of self can only be perceived through the senses, because that's what the analytical mind derives its information, its data from. And so who is John McGraw? Well, John McGraw must be my body. Right. Mm-hmm. It must be my past and my reputation and my appearance and my achievements and my credentials and my intelligence and my personality and my thoughts and my emotions and my relationships and my health and all those things all of a sudden make up who I think I am.
Right.
And on top of that, society encourages, it reinforces, right, the achievement thing, right? The more I achieve, right, then the more I am. Right. And so my self-worth gets tied to all these different things, and every culture or society is a little bit different, but whatever your culture values and cares about, that is going to be what your analytical intelligence is going to care about, and it's going to attach its identity, its concept of self to it. Right. And so I love sitting with NFL players and having them repeat after me, I am not a football player. And they start to say it, and then about halfway through the sentence, they stop and they start to smile.
Right.
And they can't finish it, right? They can't say it. And I'm like, well, okay, why can't you say that? And they're like, because I'd be lying. like I am a football player, like, right?
So
we begin to look at the limitations of language, and I ask them, okay, is that really true, or is it more accurate to say I'm a human being who chooses to play football?
Exactly. Yeah.
And so as we begin to create some separation from who we are and the things that we do, or who we are in our appearance, right, or who we are in our reputation, that begins to create a lot more freedom there. But that's difficult for the analytical mind, because it wants to attach to all those descriptors, those characteristics.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's funny how, you know, that build it or image that we create in our own head of what we should be or how we should behave, or, you know, I find that very interesting and very, yeah, simply just mind-blowing, really, if you think about it, how much we can create in our head without even this whole thing being real. You know what I mean?
Totally. Yes, we are creating our own alternate realities all the time.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. And in my personal experience, you know, it took me some time to I don't know exactly how to say it, but to find myself, if I can say that, or to truly understand what's important to me. And it actually, you know, wasn't until I became a mom, which was like over 7 years ago. And funny enough, it started by, you know, distancing myself from all the negative and toxic people around me. Because before that, I didn't really realize, I mean, I guess it was right in front of me. I just never really took the time to realize, you know, the negative effect this kind of people have on me. And, you know, on one hand, it was extremely difficult experience because, you know, I had to also distance myself from some very close people to me. But at the same time, it was, you know, an amazing experience in the sense that it was very, like, freeing. Can I say that? It was, like, very, you know. So can you maybe talk a little bit about the influence, the people that we surround ourselves with, the influence that they have on us?
Yeah, that's really, really super powerful and does require a higher level of awareness, right? To say these people are life taking, right? And if you think about people, really the world in general is, you know, what gives me life and then what takes life,
right?
And particularly as you're just kind of getting started on this journey and becoming more aware of who you are and the way that you're wired and programmed and your strengths and weaknesses and kind of personality traits, as we all grow in awareness of that, our environment is really big. Like it matters. And you know, I heard someone once say, show me your friends and I'll show you your future.
Right. Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. And I think that you can get to a place where you don't have to give your power away to people. Like you don't have to let them take energy from you, but that's very difficult. And so I would argue you want to have both. You want to have the ability to protect yourself when you're in toxic environments.
Right.
At the same time, the more that you can eliminate toxic people from your space, the better. And so I think it's a both and, right? It's an environmental thing. Surround yourself with life-giving people and situations as best you can, but then also develop the resilience, the mental skills to be able to be around toxic people without giving your power away.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I just find it very interesting. You know, sometimes you meet with a person and then 10 minutes into that chat or whatever, you're already feeling like completely drained. Like completely. And then you're thinking, okay, well, what's happening? I came into this, you know, actually in quite a, you know, good mood. What's happening, you know? So I find it really very interesting how people influence us and how they also influence our mindset and how they influence, you know, the thoughts that we have in our head or, you know, the stories that we write in our heads, if I can say that. I find that very, very interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, obviously everyone's journey is different, but what are some of the tools that, you know, we can use to change our mindset or, you know, rewire our brain or?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's a lot of different ones. I'll give you the kind of the three foundational ones that we find to be most effective, most practical. So one that can help right away, like give you immediate relief. We call it expect the expected, but it's really about aligning your expectations with the way the world typically is, right?
Right.
So I'll give you an example. Like if you have a coworker, right, that is just annoys the heck out of you, right, or just frustrates you,
right?
And every day your automatic brain shows up to work thinking that they're going to somehow be different than how they are. Right? What happens then is every day you're surprised and you get additional emotional reaction to them because you're in your brain thinking, oh my gosh, they're doing it again. I cannot believe they're doing it again, right?
Like, didn't they learn anything?
Yeah, exactly. Like, why are they still doing this? And it doesn't make any sense, right, to not expect that they're going to continue to be difficult to work with.
Right.
And so what we can do is we can just help set expectations for our automatic brain and just say, hey, guess what? That difficult person at work today or yesterday, they're going to probably be difficult today again, right?
And we don't
have to be surprised by it.
Right.
It's kind of like if any of your listeners work in customer support, right? if you prepare the customer for what's going to happen, even if it's really bad news, right? But you get out ahead of it and you help them say, hey, this is coming. This happened. We're sorry. Here's the plan. People don't typically don't overreact.
That's right? True. Yeah.
It's only when they get surprised, right? No one likes to get surprised.
No. Especially with negative surprises.
That's right. So we can help our automatic brain by just preparing it, saying, hey, we're going home for Christmas. And guess what? That annoying in-law or family member, right? they're going to be annoying and they're going to do that thing they always do. And it's okay. Like we don't have to freak out about it.
Exactly.
So that's the first thing. So expect the expected, right? And I'll be real clear on that one. Like it doesn't mean that I expect the worst, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that, that I'm lowering my expectations, right? So I'm never disappointed. It just means that the way that the world was yesterday is probably the way it's going to be tomorrow.
Right.
So that's the first one. The second one is learning how to embrace the emotion that I experience, right? Because even if I am expecting it, sometimes I'm still going to get tweaked, right? And I'm going to get triggered, and that's okay. And we call it embracing the emotion. But the key is really to let the emotion be there. I'm not trying to make it go away, and I'm not trying to not feel it. I'm recognizing that my automatic brain's doing its job, right? It's alerting me that there's a really annoying person around. There's a life-taking person around that I prefer not to be around, and I'll do my best to limit my exposure, but sometimes you can't help it.
Right.
And I'm just going to be okay. In fact, we like to be even more active around it and say, hey, bring it on. Like, thanks for the emotion. Thanks for the message.
Right.
And what that does is, and that's rooted in Dr. Kelly McGonigal's work. She's a health psychologist at Stanford University. Uh-huh. She's done a ton of research around stress and how if we would just embrace the stress that we're feeling, it has no negative health consequences. Right. It's only when we resist the stress, right, that it does a lot of damage to us. And so learning how to embrace our emotion is not natural. It takes some conscious effort, but it's an absolute game changer if we can do it.
But do you think, I'm sorry to interrupt you, do you think that has something to do with the fact that, you know, from very young age, we're told, don't cry, don't get upset, don't get mad, don't do that, you know, all these emotions, which are, you know, normal at the end of the day. It is quite normal to get upset. It is quite normal, you know, to get sad, to get upset, to get, you know, to just want to scream in somebody's face or whatever. I think this is all normal. So what I try to do with my kids is, you know, sometimes they get super upset, especially our daughter, and then she starts screaming and crying, and you know how dramatic women are. So I try to tell my kids, you know, it's okay. It's okay to be upset. It's okay to cry. But let's figure out a way to work through that emotion, or, you know, there is no need to be screaming or whatever. Let's see what we can do. You know, I try to let my kids know that it's okay, because I think that, you know, they react that way. And then at one point, they're kind of ashamed of themselves that they reacted that way. You know what I mean? Like that I think they know that they're acting totally irrational, but, you know, they're so worked up that they just cannot stop. So do you think that maybe that part has something to do with the fact that, you know, from very young age, we're just told that negative emotions are no good emotions?
On it. Yeah, you just nailed it. That's exactly it. So we've all been programmed to think that there are bad emotions that should be avoided or resisted, and there are good emotions that we should attach to and chase after. And that is a very, very dysfunctional relationship with emotion. So all emotion is good. All emotion is good, and that it's a message, right? Mm-hmm. Now the expression of that is what where we need to be mature, and we need to train the expression of it. And if we haven't trained the expression of it, that can be damaging, right? But the emotion itself is really, really good. And if we don't resist the emotion, and we know how to respond to the emotion, because that's all, it's just a message. That's all, it's just chemicals. That's all emotion is chemicals in the brain and body. Mm-hmm. And if we know how to respond to it, then we get to use it as a really useful energy source. We don't have to lose access to our prefrontal cortex and get lost in the emotion. We can actually use the emotion in a really productive, intelligent way. So you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. So the first step is align expectations with the way the world is. The second step is embrace the emotion. And then the third step is what do I have control over? Right.
Yeah.
And our automatic brain just loves to get enamored with things that we don't have control over. Sometimes we don't even have influence over, right? Yeah, like right. That annoying person or the weather or traffic
right.
Politics. And, you know, so we get so enamored with things we don't have control over. We compromise the things that we do, right? Mm-hmm. And we lose influence over those things that we do have influence over by getting enamored by those other things. And so if we can simplify life down to, in this moment, what do I have control over?
Right.
Get really clear about that. Life gets really simple and we get our power back, right? We get overwhelmed when we're focused on all these things that we don't have control over. But when we can focus in on what we do, it's really, really easy. Usually the next step is very clear when we can do that. So we found that to be a really effective three-step process. So if you're just kind of getting into mental skills training or getting into mindset training, expect the expected. So align expectations, learn how to embrace the emotion. Emotion's good. Right. Mm. Let the emotion be there. Give it time to process, embrace it, bring it, you know, let yourself feel it fully, experience that emotion and then get back to what you have control over.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I love all three of them. And I've experienced personally the last one, you know, the control part. I think the moment you realize just how little really you have control over, right. Then your life gets really, you know, so much easier and so much simpler, because as you said, you're not getting all worked up about the things that, you know, I mean, traffic. Okay. So I'm sitting in a traffic. What can I do? You know what I mean? Like there is not much to do. So, but one thing in terms of the emotions that has helped me is, you know, being a parent to two young kids is a wonderful experience, but nevertheless, it's not always easy and it's not always pleasant. So as patient as I try to be, which, you know, to be fair, I'm not a very patient person. But, you know, I try and I really work on it and I've been working on it for years. So I don't know if I have gone very far, but, you know, I'm working on it. But anyway, so what I found that it helps me enormously is, you know, if something happens with the kids and then I don't react in the way that I would have liked to react, or I snap, or, you know, I lose my nerve or whatever, what I like to do, or what I started doing, is once I've calmed down, I will write down in a few sentences what has happened. I will write in a couple of sentences how I reacted, and then I will write in a few sentences how I would have liked to react. And I find something extremely powerful in that, because, you know, then the next time a situation like this occurs, then I'm much more aware of what I've actually written down on, you know, how I would have liked to react. You know what I mean? I don't know if that makes sense, but that helps me enormously in, you know, working through that emotions, or because, you know, as a parent, you snap and then you feel bad, you know, the rest of the week kind of thing.
Right.
Which is like, you know, we're all humans. Okay, so I snapped. Okay, what did I learn from that? You know? So that's I find that really very, you know, powerful and helpful for me, at least, you know, as a mom. Obviously, I don't do that for every single thing that happens or with every single person. But, you know, if it's something a little bit bigger and I have a hard time, or, you know, it kind of, I just can't let go and I keep thinking about it and it keeps bothering me that I reacted that way or whatever, then I take the 10, 15 minutes, whatever time I need, just to process it and to write it down.
I love that. I think that's a great practice for your listeners. You know, there's been a lot of research around journaling and using journaling as a reflective exercise. And I love what you said right there, which is, how would I like to respond in the future?
Mm-hmm.
And what you're doing is you're introducing an alternative, right? Because you did what you thought was best at the time, and the emotional brain is very limited, right? It doesn't have the creativity, it doesn't have the problem solving, it just has whatever it's been programmed with. And so what you're doing there is you're dropping in an alternative response for it in the future. And so it's going to be much more accessible in the future by doing that exercise. I think that's really great.
Right. Yeah, and the funny part is that I was never really the, you know, the big believer in journaling. I thought, what a waste of time, really. Who needs that? But now it's like part of my daily routine, and I need my, you know, 15, 20 minutes, whatever, a day that, you know, nobody can disturb me because I need to journal.
That's great.
So, yeah. But from your experience, what would you say is the biggest hurdle, if I can say, in letting go of the limiting mindset?
So that's a great question. So when you say the limiting mindset, you know, I immediately go to limiting beliefs. And it's really hard to objectively look at our beliefs, right? Because we hold our beliefs very dear, and that we've held them very close for most of our lives.
Right.
In fact, you know, as in our training, as we go through the letting go process, letting go of my achievements, right, and my appearance and my my reputation and all these different things that I have some level of attachment to. Ultimately, the one that is we often find is we hold closest to are my beliefs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my core beliefs are they've helped me, they've protected me, you know, throughout the years.
Mm.
And oftentimes the people I hang around have the same core beliefs, and so they seem like reality.
Mm.
And getting to a place where I can separate from those, right? And really objectively say, is this in fact working for me, right? Because what you'll find is that a lot of people actually work for their beliefs.
Right. Right?
They're really at the mercy of their beliefs. And if you can get to a place where you can set your beliefs aside and really begin to analyze them, and then say, hey, these ones here are really good. I'm going to pick those back up and carry those close to me again. That's great, right? No, but sometimes there's core beliefs that we have. Sometimes we don't even know they're there, and we haven't objectively looked at them to say, is this really serving me well, right?
Right.
Or is this creating unnecessary stress in my life, right?
Mm.
Or is it creating conflict in relationships? So the hardest part in my experience is that we hold them so closely that we think they're who we are, and we're not able to objectively look at them and say, are these working for me or am I working for them?
Right.
And that can be challenging. But sometimes you've got to let go of deeply held, for example, political beliefs, right? Or religious beliefs, right? Or judgments you have about yourself or the people around you. So that's difficult for everybody.
Yes, yes. Well, I find personally that probably one of the most difficult things, you know, to do is to get to know yourself truly and really, because, you know, I feel like we're all work in progress, and I think that we're all given each day the opportunity to work on ourselves and you know, I think there's so many different aspects of working on ourselves. And when I say work on ourselves, it's not a matter of, you know, being an athlete and being better than, you know, performance and so on, but just our mindset and, you know, our, as you said, our beliefs and so on. And I find it very, you know, very interesting journey. As I said, for me, my awakening moment, if I can say so, is when I became a mom. I mean, I think I've learned more, and I know I've said that many times before, but I think I've learned more about myself and about, you know, what truly matters to me and what is important to me, and I feel like I've, you know, like self-development or whatever that might be, more in the last 7 years than you know, in the 35 years before that,
right?
Which was you know, it's been very interesting experience, and I think it's, you know, we're all work in progress, and you have to work on that every single day. You know, you're given opportunities, and I think you have to take them and work, you know, work on yourself.
Yeah, well, you mentioned at the beginning that many of your listeners are probably parents, and
yes,
or maybe stay-at-home moms. I have two children as well, and yeah, being a parent is one of the greatest, most challenging experiences in life. And one of the big shifts for me happened when I took the posture that you're talking about of saying, hey, you know what, I'm in some ways my children's teacher,
right,
and in other ways they're my teacher.
And
if I can take the posture of a student more and go into these difficult situations that are triggering me, that are creating stress for me, and say, what's this exposing inside of me, like what do I need to learn here in this moment, this is an opportunity, right? This is not something to be endured, right? This is not something that I just can't wait to get through to get the kids to the next stage. Like,
there's
something really powerful and special here. If I can slow down and if I can really pay attention, if I can move into the discomfort, I can move into the guilt or the shame that I'm feeling around this. There's a real opportunity here for growth and for me to become, you know, an even better parent to my child.
Exactly. Yeah. For me, I feel like, you know, for me, the exciting part is, of course, you know, being a parent and see them growing up and so on. But for me, the exciting part really is also for me having the opportunity to grow with them as a person.
Yes.
Because it's not only, as you said, it's not only you teaching them, but I feel like they're actually teaching us much more, you know, if we're willing to see that, or if we're willing to open our eyes and our, I mean, not only our eyes, but, you know, just to be open-minded and see, you know, all the different opportunities every single day that they're giving us to learn and to grow with them.
Yes, yes. And what you're doing right there is you're meeting your child as a human, one human meeting another human, right? And what often happens is we put on our parent label, right? And then we slap the child label on our children, and then it's a label talking to label, right?
Exactly.
Which can often be ego talking to ego.
Exactly.
Right?
And
we can actually sort of bring out the worst in ourselves. And there's a time to be a parent. I want to be real clear about that.
Oh yeah,
there's a
absolutely, time. Absolutely. Yeah.
But there's a time to say, you know what, I'm going to get down on my child's level.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to connect with them as a parent right now. I'm going to connect with them just as a human being. I'm going to be very curious.
Exactly.
Right. And just observe everything about them. Right. And I really want to understand what makes them tick and think, okay, what is God? What is the universe? What do I have to learn here in this moment?
Exactly.
And I think that's a really great exercise for all of us parents.
Yes, absolutely. But I know you're busy, so one last question.
Okay.
Given your personal as well as client experience, what will be the number one advice for anyone looking to start on that journey?
Wow, that's a big question. Well, obviously listening to your podcast would be step number one.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, well, you've got a tremendous resource here and a lot of great great advice and a whole lot more to come.
Thank you.
So I think finding a resource, finding a trusted resource like you or maybe there's another author or podcast or ebook or something. So I think it's kind of finding someone that you connect with and that, mm-hmm. that has you know is a little bit further down the road, mm-hmm. and finding that mentor. Right. Mm-hmm. To say, there's something good here. And then we spend some time there and then you find, hey, there's another mentor here that I can learn from.
Right.
And so I think starting that way, but then at the same time, if we really want to integrate this into our lives, you need to be a student, but then you also need to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. And then you find someone else to mentor. Right. And right. you find someone else you can bring along on the way. And so you always have mentors and mentees in your life that are teaching you, and then you're getting to pour into them. And I find that that's a really great balance to have.
That's a great one. I truly like that one. And I know it sounds simple, but sometimes it's a little bit more difficult than it sounds, just like everything, you know, everything in life. But I like that, yeah. Because I think, you know, also when you go through that experience, I mean, I've seen it also with my clients when it comes to, you know, just teaching them all about, you know, healthy habits and how do you create the healthy habits or how do you create the habits that you need for a sustainable, healthy lifestyle. And it's, you know, then a lot of from my personal experience comes up, of course, you know, how I went through all this and the different steps. And, you know, obviously we're all different and we have to kind of adjust and see what works for me and what doesn't work for me. But I definitely like that one. I do.
Good. I'm so glad.
Yeah, John, thank you so much for your time and, you know, for sharing your experience. It's very much appreciated. It's definitely a topic that I'm very passionate about. And I know we've talked many times about different aspects of this topic and something that I think a lot of us can benefit from and something that can definitely improve our experiences in the journey we're on. And to our audience, thank you so much for listening. And to learn more about Vision Pursue, make sure that you check their webpage, www.visionpursue.com. And you also mentioned, John, that you have the app. Do you want to quickly talk about the app?
Yeah. So the app we use in training, but we also use as just a standalone app. So individual users can go in and download The app in the App Store, it's just visionpursue.com. I'm sorry, just Vision Pursue.
Right.
And then you'll be prompted to create your own account. So it is a monthly subscription, but it's available, and it's all of our training in daily exercises. So it's about 10 minutes a day of training. And what we see are the core mental skills necessary for peak performance.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Enjoyed it very much.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening and for being here. It truly means the world to me. I would love to connect with as many of you as possible. So let's connect on Instagram. You can find me at Slowolution for your daily dose of healthy living inspiration. If you feel inspired by this episode and want to learn more about all things health, well-being, and motherhood, be sure to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. This way, the podcast can reach and inspire even more moms and moms-to-be. And make sure you stay tuned for the many upcoming exciting episodes. Wish you all a lovely week.